Thank you very much, Tanya. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the BC Members Call taking place on the 10th of July, 2013. On the call today, we have Zahid Jamil, Marilyn Cade, John Berard, Steve Del Bianco, Elisa Cooper, Susan Kawaguchi, Camille Stewart, Gabriella Slack, Anjali Hansen, Richard Friedman, Laura Covington, and Chris Chaplow. We have apologies from Aisha Hassan. I would like to remind all participants to please state their names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you, Elisa.
Well, first of all, thank you to all of you for attending. I know many of you are trying to get ready to leave for Durban, but I thought this was a really important issue for us. And as Susan Kawaguchi was a member or is a member of the expert working group, I thought it would be great to hear directly from her, her perspectives. And I'm very thankful to her for very graciously agreeing to present to us her thoughts and an overview of the report. And I thought this was a great opportunity for us to hear from her and ask her questions. We still have a little bit of time scheduled when we meet on the Tuesday next week to talk about the expert working group report and, you know, probably discuss then how we go about making our thoughts heard on it. But in today's session, I really wanted to hear from Susan in terms of, like, what her thoughts are and how we should be supporting the report and her. So with that, Susan, I'm going to turn it over to you, if that's okay.
That sounds fine, Elisa. Thank you, everybody, for taking the time out. Just a little bit of background information. I work for Facebook, and I am the domain manager there. And most of you I know, but I know the BC is growing, so I thought I'd include that. But also, I was on the WHOIS review team, the AOC WHOIS review team, and spent a year and a half working in a similar team as I'm working now, developing recommendations, but we were very limited on what we could look at. You know, the feeling the whole time we were working was WHOIS is a 1980 product protocol. We need to move on and create a, you know, 2025 protocol. So we delivered our recommendations and report to the board. Took a while, a little frustrating. And the board came, and in the meantime, the FSAC came out with a report that basically said we missed the point, and that WHOIS needed to be rethought, reimagined. So the board and FADI sort of got together, decided that they would implement the WHOIS review team's recommendations as they could, but really wanted to develop a whole new protocol, whole new process. So that's then I landed on the next team, and for some reason I applied. But So we've been working diligently since February, and we truly tried to just take it from step one to think, what would we like in a directory service? We try not to use the term WHOIS, so I still rely on that a lot. And we started out with purposes and identifying needs and current needs and maybe needs going forward. And so, but this is all board directed. We're tasked with this. This will go back to the board and to FADI and then to the GNSO. So we're not circumventing any ICANN processes. We may have sped some things up. You know, FADI definitely likes to move at a faster pace. So that's how we started. So, Benny, can you just move to the next page, next slide? So we published a draft report, and please all remember, this is still very much a draft. We don't have all the answers, and we're looking to all of you to help us sort of flesh out things and call out what, you know, doesn't seem like it will work at all. So, not that slide. Go back. It's just page two. Okay. Now, can you go back one more slide?
Sorry, my screen froze, and I'm not sure what happened there.
Okay. So anyway, we look. No problem. So we looked at all kinds of use cases, and you know, we first started out with what do you absolutely need in a directory service? What makes a domain name work, and what can we not live without? And servers was one of those things, some sort of technical contact. And then we moved on from there. We looked at all the data elements. We looked at what CCPLDs were doing. We looked at the privacy issues, though we haven't fleshed those out completely yet either. And so we went through, you'll see on the lower slide there that, you know, we looked at access methods, validation and accuracy. We really spent a lot of time just thinking hard and sort of coming up with things and tearing them apart again. And we came up with this, and Vinny, if you could go to the next slide, what we're calling our aggregated registry directory system, I think. I always forget the name, what the acronym really means. So basically what would happen is a registrar would register a domain name. The registrar would collect the data. The data would be stored as it is now at the registry, and then all the registries would feed up into the aggregated database. And that is where you would go to look up information on a domain name. But not all information collected would be provided at the start. You know, there is some, we're working out a system where you would get some of the most important elements that need to run a domain name for a domain name to work. Those would be pretty freely available, but you might not. And we haven't made these, you know, we haven't come up to decisions on these either. And actually, the TDP process would probably make most of these decisions. You would go to the aggregated database, and you would have to sign in if you wanted information from the database beyond the basic minimum. And then if you have a crucial need for additional information that maybe we don't collect currently for the Who Is record, but there's a lot of information that a registrar collects and a registry collects, a thick Who Is registry collects. And so maybe all of that information is in that record for that domain name, but you only get it with an authenticated process. So we know who's looking at the information, and they have to provide reasons for for needing the information. And so this is all still a work in progress. You know, there's a lot of things that we haven't thought about or we've thought about and haven't had time to think to really flesh out. But basically we're going to a centralized database. With the new GTLDs launching, you know, we have a potential of over, a 1,000 registries. And it does not make sense that an individual internet user who's trying to do business of some sort with a site on the internet has to go to over 1,000 places to look up information. It's one of 1,000. So we thought this was much more internet user friendly, consumer friendly, and the aggregated database provides a much easier method to validating and auditing data. We are not advocating that the registrars are relieved of any of the recent requirements in the 2013 RAA. Those should still be done at the registrar. The registry should still collect it, but if you have 200 million, 300 million records in one database, then you have an easier auditing process. And right now, Nominet has started to do this. Nominet will go back to a registrant and say, you know, they are the registry, and you have not provided the information, valid or accurate information. So there is some of the CCTLDs are starting to move toward this model, and we thought this could work. So, you know, if you've read the report or if you have time to read parts of the report, there are, you know, there's a lot, like I said, a lot of things we have not completely fleshed out. It's a draft report, and we will need all of your input, thought processes, to really get this right. But we also, as a team, we're not tasked with all the, you know, with the implementation, but more of a high level, this is what the policy, well, not even policy, but this is what we are aiming for. Policies and implementation will have to be fleshed out by ICANN and the PDP process. So can you go down to one more, the next slide for me, Benny? And so we do have, we have a couple sessions. Well, we have one session in the main room on Monday at the ICANN meeting if you're going to be there. We hope you will, you know, if you are in Durban, that you will be able to stand up and give us your thoughts. But these are the additional questions. If you can sort of bring up the discussion questions a little higher on the screen, Benny. These are the questions that we really, we're asking the community. Tell us, you know, tell us what you think would be the advantage or the disadvantage. How are we going to authenticate and identify the users of this database? You know, what are we going to do to prevent things, you know? So I'm going to leave those list of questions on the screen, but and just open it up to questions from you.
It's Marilyn. How do you want to do this, Lisa? Do you want to take a cue or?
Yeah, that sounds
That's
great.
Fine. You start, Marilyn.
Well, first of all, I want to thank Susan, and I know we have a number of new members who've joined us, but I want to thank Susan and confess that I actually chaired ICANN's first Who Is Task Force, which lasted for 2 years, and for the last year of its meeting plus, we met two times a week for 2 hours at a time. I really applaud the fact that you've accepted this role, not only for the BC, Susan, but also for the CSG, which is a really important contribution. So having said that, now I'm going to ask for more, right? you know, I think this is going to be a really interesting time for us to hear from others in the community about their views. Quite some time ago, there were a number of questions within the BC about concerns about ICANN's failure, either through resources or capability, to actually enforce requirements in the highly distributed registrar and registry environment. And I think those concerns still exist. So I was interested in the discussion that might have taken place, realizing there may be confidentiality or discussions that are go on within the working group. But I was interested in the considerations that have developed so far about this ability to manage a highly distributed versus a more centralized approach. I'm also familiar with the disparity of capability of the registrars in terms of their provision of accurate data, and I wanted to hear more about that discussion, if that's possible.
We definitely discuss, you know, we keep in mind the compliance issues all the time, because I think we all would agree that, especially previously, ICANN compliance has lacked ability to make any of the registrars, or even willing to make the registrars or registrars comply with anything in the contract. That's my personal view. That's definitely not the EWG's view. But because we haven't really fleshed out the system, we haven't figured out where those contractual obligations would be yet. All of the existing obligations in the RAA and the registry agreement would not be interrupted in my viewpoint, our viewpoint of this. But, you know, we are placing a total new third party that the registrant would not be aware of for the most part. You know, I mean, unfortunately, a lot of people who register domains don't even understand that, you know, they're working with a registrar. They may not even know what that term means. And then they definitely don't know that a registry is involved, too. And so, and then to add that third, you know, this aggregated database vendor in that list of people that they may, or entities that they may have to interact with, is going to be difficult. We understand that. And then where does the contracts exist? Where will they, you know, and what will have to be changed to implement a system like this? So those are on our to-do list, but have not been fleshed out. One of the things, and to your, you know, the disparity of capability of registrars and registries, I think we all viewed a centralized database as being able to audit and recognize where the problems truly are. And not, you know, I mean, if you look at today's, you know, inaccuracy reports, probably GoDaddy's getting the most of those, but that's not because GoDaddy doesn't do a good job necessarily. It's because GoDaddy has the volume of domain registration. So with a main central database that you could audit, you could say, okay, well, this registry has, you know, this percentage of issues, inaccuracy and problems in the record, and that they only have the 1% of the records in the database. The disparity there, we need to focus on that, on that registry or registrar, whatever it may be. So I think the database would help in that element to recognize and then point ICANN compliance in the right direction to train and educate.
Thanks.
Looks like Steve got his hand up next.
Hey, thanks, Susan. Thanks a lot for contributing on WHOIS, which you've done for years. Appreciate that. One fast question, did you use any of the fact-based WHOIS studies to support your work?
Yeah, I should have mentioned that in my overview. We did. ICANN, Denise Michelle's team loaded us up with every possible document. And for the most part, I was pretty familiar with those. Not everybody was on the team because we did. The team was chosen from, you know, very geographic, you know, criteria. A lot of people around the world, some not necessarily involved with ICANN previously. So there was a lot of reading and reviewing reports, so the NORC report, and all the way back to 2000 we've been reading things. So there's a lot of material.
Great. Whenever you're speaking about this, make sure you cite the fact-based reports as being supportive of the work, or we'll never get studies like that again. You know what I mean?
Okay.
That's second point is that I'm a huge fan of centralized or aggregated access, particularly on page 32, your recommendation for reverse lookups should be huge. And then I had two questions. In your view of how they would validate accuracy, do you anticipate the aggregated vendor, the ARDS vendor, actually contacting domain registrants in their validation or correction process?
You know, we've talked about that because that is the new model for Nominate. So Nominate came in and provided quite a bit of information to us. The problem they're having is people ignore them. So it may be that it goes back to the registry, back to the registrar contacts the registrant. The other thing we've talked about is freezing a record. You know, there may be some immediate, for certain levels of inaccuracy, there may be some immediate sanctions that could take place so that you get the registrant's attention. But we haven't come to a decision on whether it's the aggregated database vendor or the actual registrar or registry, and it would be great to hear people's suggestions on that.
Okay. Do you think that the billing information captured only by the registrar, since they're the ones who collect the money, does that information make its way through, not the credit card number, but the billing contact and billing information make its way through to the ARDS repository?
I hope so.
Okay.
That's what I'm advocating for.
Got it. Final question is, what's the likelihood that this would be an acceptable model even for the country code or CCTLD operators?
You know, I mean, we haven't really discussed that. We've only focused on the GTLDs. It's a big enough, you know, nut to crack there. But
GTLD representatives on the EWG.
Yes. So we have Chris Despain, who from Australia. So
on the role of we make this work, maybe he could sell it into the CCs, because it'd be outstanding to have a repository for the whole world instead of separate.
I absolutely agree.
Susan, fantastic work. Thanks for your answers.
No problem. Elisa.
So we've had an opportunity to submit our thoughts about the report. You know, based on your perspective, are you happy with all of it? Are there areas that we should focus on in our comments?
So, from a sort of a personal issue, I feel like I'm always hammering on proxy and privacy, and I think that's important to a lot of business owners. We need it. Facebook uses it, but we, for new brand rollouts, but we don't run sites with a proxy. Well, somebody does it without my permission at the company. And we have not given much detail in this report. So we are meeting in August, at the end of August, face-to-face again, and that'll be a continued topic. Hopefully we'll get sort of flesh it out at that point. So definitely any ideas or background material on proxy and privacy that you would like to, you know, because I know the BC has weighed in a lot on that issue. So that would be important to continue to comment on. The other thing is we haven't quite got there as a team yet, but there is a bright line between a record for a registrant that is using that domain for commercial uses and in an individual that is using it just for anything non-commercial, blog, whatever. But so input on what you, what the BC or the individual companies would view as where that bright line lays, you know, is it a blog with advertising on it? Is that, you know, commercial use? Because, I mean, with Article 29, and I haven't read that letter yet coming out about the data escrow or storage, none of that pertains to commercial. That doesn't pertain. I mean, Facebook has to do a lot of things, but we don't have the right to keep our information hidden from our users. We have to put more information on a website in the EU, And so I think we need to always keep in mind the information that's provided in this directory. Is it truly an individual with no commercial use, or is it commercial use? So those are my two big ones.
Okay.
So I would love to hear.
So privacy and proxy, and then commercial use versus individual use, where the bright line is.
Correct. Right.
Helpful. Thank you.
No problem. Don.
Hey, Susan. How are you this morning?
Good.
I have three things. First, I want to thank you for flying the privacy flag. My personal view, I think you and I have talked about this, is that in order for us to make sure that we have the most accurate database possible, we have to make sure that the authentication protocols and technologies are as strict as possible. And I think that would be a way during an appropriate level of privacy as distinguished from anonymity. I have two questions, and they both relate to sort of trying to get a sense of the discussion that might not have been revealed in the report so far.
Okay.
The first one is, was there any discussion about what I think of as gray market TLDs, so the country codes that operate as commercial entities, or did the group persist in the sort of legacy and artificial distinction of country code and GTLD?
So far we are using CCTLD's, you know, policies and processes to help to review and to help aid our discussion, but we definitely are staying away, and that's basically the mandate of our team from CCTLDs. Now, I think like Steve's suggestion, like maybe if we do such a good job and they'll want to be part of this, that's one thing. But I think you're entering into, you know, those are all individual governments. So I don't know what the answer is there, and we're not really discussing CCTLDs as being part of this.
Right, and the discussion did view .co.me.tv as CCTLDs, right?
Correct.
Okay. And the other question I have is, spinning off the one you had, the penultimate question, how could next generation RDS operating costs be borne? Was there any discussion about charging for Whois lookups?
You know, we've sort of evaded that question yet, even though we've asked the community. As we talk about this, it's a constant question. Well, wait, you know, that sounds expensive. How is this going to work? We don't know, to be absolutely honest. And hopefully, you know, we do have a session in Durban on Sunday, a closed session where we're working all day, and maybe we'll get to that. But we truly ran out of time on some key issues, so we will continue to work.
Do you think that might be an appropriate subject of the policy development process?
It may be. It may be. You know, I mean, and this is truly my own personal point of view and not a very well-received one in most areas. To me, you know, Facebook.com is not a $9.99 domain name. Domain names require – there are people paying for all of the things for services that do not exist really in the initial cost of a domain name, whether it be in the fraud, fighting, combating fraud, or you pay extra for security. So, you know, my viewpoint is that maybe it should be both ways. And this is not the EWG's viewpoint, that maybe there is a cost to getting this information if you're wanting to review the records, and an additional initial cost going forward on a domain name. That would be what I would suggest we talk about in our group. That's not what the group has decided.
All right. Thank you, Susan.
No problem. Stephen.
Yeah, thanks. Hi. I just wanted to go back to the ccTLD point that you just mentioned and you mentioned with Steve earlier on. Just not a question, but a comment. I know from very recent discussions, certainly with a couple of ccTLD operators, that they do not want to be included in the model as suggested, the RDS model. Well, to be more specific, they don't want to be included in a single model. It seems that they value their independence a great deal, and when people like myself or I guess Steve shares that same view, suggest that certainly for business and in general for internet users out there, a single unified database would probably be easier to use and more useful to people who don't know the intricacies of Whois and the domain name system. They say that they respond that they are the keepers of their own domains. It's the national interest, and they have specific laws to respond to, and those are frequently misunderstood by ICANN. And one of the examples that was given to me in this in a conversation I had on this last week was that Article 29 letter, which I have read and which clearly states that the current RAA falls afoul of certain European directives on registrars to with regards to personal data and the way they should both record it and keep it. So just to put that out there and add that to the discussion, because I think it's probably in most BC members' interest to go towards a unified Whois model, and if that's the RDS, then fine. And it seems like we've got our work cut out, if we'll agree on that, to convince the CC that that's the case. Thank you.
Stefan, I would completely agree with you. You know, right now, just getting all the GTLDs to conform to one policy is pretty difficult. So, you know, I can't even imagine. I'm not sure I want to be on the team that tries to convince the ccTLDs to sign on to something like this. But there are industry, you know, products out there right now. I can go to Domain Tools and look up a lot of ccTLDs. So the information is being gathered and provided. So, you know, it is obviously a need whether or not ICANN can fill that, you know, figure out a process to fill that need, you know, that's anybody's guess.
Thanks.
This is Bill Smith. Can I get in the queue?
Sure, Bill. It's your turn then.
Okay. So, as I said on the larger webinar, I am, you know, my concern is one of my concerns on this is the fact that it is centralized and it supposedly will support the internet. I agree with the centralized access. That was things that we had in the review team's report. But having centralized access does not require a centralized database. And as an example of that, we have the DNS itself. It appears centralized to the user, but in fact is not. It is highly distributed. So that's just generally a concern of mine that we are working on, from my perspective, an assumption that this would be a good thing, centralized access, has left to a centralized model. That's, again, my viewpoint, having not been part of the discussion. Again, you know, thanks to everybody on the working group who did this work. I see my initial reaction from my first read of the report was this is a great way for the registrars to save money. They are no longer going to be required to maintain a port 43 or any type of service for who is, as best I can tell from the report. And there have been claims at various times that by registrars that this, in fact, is an expense to them. So it must be an expense that they're happy to offload. So I see that as a gain for registrars. And I'm wondering if there's anything to offset that. I think having a centralized way of auditing may be useful, but I believe there are ways that could be provided potentially to registrars themselves or done in some other way that wouldn't require centralization of the data for access. I'm concerned about the speed with which this will be updated, especially given things like fast clocks that are still in use. Costs, generally, I think this could be highly expensive. And then just issues related with centralizing the information, especially that information related to law enforcement, security researchers, and operational security folks. This will be a target, a highly desired target to both breach and then to offload the data associated with those folks. And I have no idea how to do authentication on an international scale and to do so in a way that will both ensure that we don't have bad actors gaining access to the system, number one, two, being certain that people who should have access, but only when they are authorized to do so. So as an example, when an employee comes on board or leaves a company, and then the liability that may attach to an employee of a company who says, I'm using this data for this purpose, and then that data is used for some other reason, unbeknownst to the company or even the individual that is using it for another purpose. So I think there needs to be, there's an awful lot of work that needs to be done on the details on such a thing. Such a significant change. While such a significant change may be required, I have a lot of concerns about how this would play out, especially if done in a PDP. Anyway, that's a lot, I know.
Well, I did take some notes. So, you know, I share most of those concerns. But we have to move to something. What's working isn't working. We think this would work. Do we know all the details? No, nope. I'm not going to say we do. We've discussed the fact that, you know, relieving the registrars of the responsibility for a port 43, they probably would like. We also got into a heated discussion over what is authoritative. You know, and I think we finally left it as the registry's record would be authoritative, so therefore you could get an up-to-date, you know, registry record through the RDS. And so, because, you know, one of my concerns was, wait, if this is not authoritative, then what am I putting in my UDRP as the registrant record, the domain name record? I want something that the courts would view as the record, the authoritative record. So, you know, we need to sort of figure that one out. We do see this as, you know, there could be some lag in updating these records, but then you'd have real-time access back to that authoritative record at the registry. So as long as the registrar and the was communicating, you know, as they should with the registry, I think we'll be fine there. The auditing, I still think, is something that's extremely valuable out of this. And the security, I think we have security issues with each and every who is database around the world right now. So we need to put those security measures in place. And this is not a huge number of records. It may seem like that, but, you know, the telephone companies, you know, how many records does Verizon and AT&T have for each, you know, mobile user, and how many financial transaction records are kept? So there are good practices and best practices for that are already established for protecting this database. And I think we need, you know, whomever runs this database needs to be fully responsible for that. The system will always be gamed to a certain extent, and I think, you know, when you brought up the authentication and the liability to a company or employee that uses, states are going to use the information for one thing and uses it for a completely different reason, I think LexisNexis faces that issue right now. I can go on, you know, through our membership with LexisNexis, go on and really look up almost anybody in the U.S. at least. I can look up and I can figure out, you know, where they own their house, how many mortgages they have, and a lot of information. So, but there's safeguards for that, and there's some internal auditing in our company to make sure that nobody's using that for the wrong reason. So I think there's already good use case examples of a database with so much information and valuable information and how to protect it. Does that answer your question? Or, Bill, is there anything else you want to?
Well, it answers the liability thing at the ability to add and remove people, granting them access. And this just becomes yet another thing that has to be done potentially on an onboarding and offboarding.
Yes.
But I'm not sure how, you know, so for Lexis and Nexis, I'm not sure how that is handled, how an account is shut off. But, you know, who is currently at least is run entirely differently. And so making this change is a huge change into businesses. Because you suddenly have, I mean, as the report says, people will be licensed to have access. That's the word that is used. So that's a pretty strong word. And companies will need to understand that. That liability will attach if someone, one of their employees, requests information and then does something inappropriate with it, or anyone in the company does it, whether it's disclosed, inappropriately disclosed or whatever. So it's a pretty big change. And at this point, we don't know. Or at least I haven't been able to glean from the report, having read it a couple of times, what information will be available without login and what will be restricted to various levels of login and purpose. And without knowing those things, it's really difficult to make, really to analyze and offer much of an opinion, except sort of as I have, which these are the areas that could be problematic.
Right. No, and we appreciate all the thought you've put into this. You know, that is one of our, you know, our discussion questions that we put out to the community. How should public and gated data elements be classified using what criteria? You know, a lot of discussion has gone on around that, but we have not really made any decisions, and we're really hoping the community can guide us there. You know, personally, I think I have a pretty good sense of what I would recommend, but that is not a EWG consensus agreement yet. So the question is, we start off, okay, servers and a technical contact. start there, you know, and what else do you need to be shown to the public? I think that anybody doing business with an entity should know the name of the entity and where they, you know, where their home office is and all of that, not home as in your home, like house, but, you know, more like here, this is our corporate office, and you can double check that with other types, with our trademark registration data to make sure that it is Facebook. So we're really hoping that we get a lot of input on those data elements. And, you know, the verified credit card information, not the credit card number, but, you know, who's paying for a domain name, you know, that I think should be pretty not available. We should make that very stringent to get that information, because for the most part, at least for my needs in my job day to day, I don't need that credit card information. I might need it if it's a bad guy to really find it. But so maybe in October you'll have a better idea of what, you know, of what those data elements are. That's our hope, to have this all wrapped up in October.
Yeah, just one final thing, Susan. I think I'm very much aligned with you on the what data should be available and why, and pretty much the bright line is commercial use. And
right.
If it's being used in commerce in any way, and I mentioned even just ads on a blog, that means you have to have a disclosure of, you know, quote-unquote the home office. And
right.
All the information that goes with that. If it's truly personal and private, then perhaps, you know, a technical contact is sufficient. Provided some other things happen as well on the security side, as an example, and this is getting into the details, but that domain may be subject to not resolving if there's malware and other things, right?
Right.
That's going on. Because if we can't contact somebody to deal with issues or a deficient site, we do need to be able to deal with these things quickly. So I'm certainly in the mind. Commercial use, absolutely larger, you know, broader information set available. Purely private, less. But in both cases, we need ways to mitigate security concerns.
Right. No, I would agree. And, you know, one of the that sort of relates to this is one of the things we keep talking about is truly anonymous registrations. Few and far between, you know, when it really comes to the needs out there. There's some critical needs for someone to be able to advocate against the government and not be known. But, you know, in my mind, we need to identify someone in that community to step up, take that on, and provide a service where, you know, when the FBI, the CIA, Interpol comes to them, they're completely armed to say, nope, you're not conforming. Because anytime you give someone anonymous information and register a domain name at a registrar, that leaves that registrar very vulnerable to turn it over. Are they going to agree to the CIA or to this individual? Who are they going to protect? There's a desperate need for a truly anonymous registration information, but it has to be a service, and someone has to identify that from that community and develop something. That's my opinion. So, you know, there's a lot to this. So, and it looks like, Steve, you have a question.
Thanks, Susan. It's a general question to say that when we evaluate your recommendations, what are we comparing them to? The best of all possible worlds, the optimal solution, or does it merely need to be an improvement? Current system of distributed whois with uniquely applied rules for validation, verification, and access from all the different registrars. In other words, do we have to be just incrementally better than status quo, or have you been charged with something in terms of optimal outcome?
Well, you know, we've been charged with thinking completely out of the box and absolutely designing the best system. Unfortunately, your own, you know, a lot of times your thinking is sort of guided by what you know. So it has been really hard to go, oh, we don't have to adhere to that. We don't have to do that just because the WHOIS protocol did that. So we would love to hear ideas that are completely, that we haven't come up with and that is completely different but workable.
Yeah, but think about my question. My question is, after all the new ideas have been stirred into the pot, there will be a go, no-go decision about whether to proceed with this. And when that decision comes up, there will be both costs and benefits, and that's where this criteria is. Do we need to just be better than the status quo, or is there some higher bar they're asking you to reach? And I know it's tough to answer right now, but let's keep that in mind. The current system, well, it kind of stinks, so it really wouldn't be hard to do better.
Yeah, I think we have a lot higher bar than to do better. To be perfect, I don't think we have that bar. So, but I will keep that in mind. That's a good point. Anybody else? All right. Well, it sounds like we've answered all the questions today. If you're going to be in Durban, please come to our session, and then we'll be also talking again on Tuesday, I think. So thank you all, and I appreciate you listening to me.
Well, Susan, I just want to take this opportunity to extend my sincerest thanks for all of your work and everything you do for the business constituency, and in particular your work on this expert working group. In addition to the thick WHOIS working group, you worked on before, or the WHOIS policy review team that you worked on before.
Right.
So thank you for everything, and, you know, it's greatly appreciated, and it's very helpful for me, and I'm sure for others, to hear directly from you your perspective. So thank you so much, and, yes, we'll see everybody that's attending Durban very shortly. So thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.